RadioInfluence.com.
You're listening to the Games Galore Podcast with your host, Brian Edwards.
Ladies and gents, welcome in. Games Galore 48, 9/6/18, which means it's my birthday.
Oh, congrats, bro. Happy birthday.
Thanks, Harbo.
No idea.
Is just a number, and mine's unlisted.
There you go. I like that.
For the first time since 1975, the Semis and the Canes, S-C-U-M, are both 0-1. I've slept good this week, Harbo. The Semis and the Canes are both 0-1 and both got humiliated.
Dude, it was bad in Tallahassee.
Man, oh, that's right. You went to that game.
Dude, detention could be cut with a knife. We showed up like 20 minutes late, got there, and, you know, I don't really care about the Hokies. I don't really care about
the Seminoles. Was it 7-0 when you got up there or 10-0?
10-0.
Yeah!
And so, and everybody in this box was like huge, huge fans. They're all geared out, screaming. They're
pissed off when you walk in.
They're chopping all over the place, you know. And, man, it just got worse and worse. And that tension was rising. And, oh, man, then they blocked that that punt, and they scored a touchdown, and I just put my head down, and then it started raining on all of them out there. I mean, luckily I was covered, but you could see the fans, they were beaten down.
Is that when you texted me pimp? Is that when you texted me pimp slap after the
block punt?
I did,
man.
I loved it. I'd forgotten you were there. In fact, I think it took me like 30 seconds to remember that you were there when you texted it.
Dude, it was bad. But good for you.
Yeah, and excuse me. So, I saw your school president. Oh, by the way, I like your real alma mater, Eastern Michigan, plus right. 17 at Purdue this week.
Awesome.
11-1 against the spread. Their last 12 as a road underdog. Only lost by double digits once last year, and that was a 12-point loss. Catching 17 at Purdue, Eastern Michigan. Not one of my bigger plays of the week, but before I got off on that,
right,
I was gonna bring up your real maize and blue squad. Mm-hmm. And when the president is having to come out and say Jim Harbaugh is not on the hot seat after week one, that's not good.
People are angry.
That means the natives are restless.
Indeed they are. I mean, we just have to. All right, so we didn't beat Notre Dame, so we have to at least beat State. I mean, if we don't beat State, then, I mean, you're going to see a lot of couches on fire.
And we learned a lot in week one. I learned that my premise all summer that the Big Ten East had overtaken the SEC West as the best division in college football and had three legit top 15 teams. We learned that that premise of mine was absolute dog shit.
This is not true.
And the demise of the Bayou Bengals has been greatly exaggerated. Now, I'm 99% confident that most times when I talked to LSU this summer, I threw in the caveat that, well, let me see Joe Burrow play. If he's the man, then I kind of take back what I'm potentially saying. I basically just said that. Well, first off, they had their lowest season win total since pre-Saban. I mean, we might have to go back to the, what was it? The Curly Hallman days. No, but not that far back. The Jerry DiNardo days to find a year where LSU's season win total was 7.5 or fewer. But I said, look, they still have LSU-level talent on defense. And, look, his numbers weren't flashy the other night because it was a pimp slide. They didn't need, you know, I mean, once you just jump all over the SCUM Hurricanes, you know, you didn't have to pass the ball. So don't just, if you didn't watch the game Sunday night in, where was it? Jerry World? Yeah. If you didn't watch that game, don't look at the stats and form any opinion. Joe Burrow passed the eye test with flying colors, and I thought he aced the post game interview with, I think it was Michelle Tafoya, but yeah, LSU's demise has been greatly exaggerated. We have the one and only, my former Marietta Daily Journal cohort 18 years ago, friend of the show, Jay Greason, columnist for the Chattanooga Times Free Press and the co-host of Press Row on some radio station in Chattanooga that I'll look up and get correct when I'm introducing him between now and then over the break. And his picks column, he went 5-1 last week. He's got some picks to share with us. So we're just doing a little quick intro. We're going to get to him in like 5-10 minutes. So, Harbo, I usually don't, I usually just wing it. I actually have prepped. Look at these.
Wow.
Even with good handwriting.
Even on your birthday, too.
Even with good handwriting, some meticulous notes.
My goodness.
So I'm just going to throw out some, let's start with the week. You want to go with week one losers or winners first?
Let's go losers.
Let's go losers.
That's the team
I like to start with the losers first, especially when it's FSU and Miami and Willie Taggart. Just an inexcusable. I'm wondering if you were there at this point yet, because I think it was 10-0 Harbo, when FSU got down to the 1 yard line and the replay clearly showed that it was a touchdown, which it's on the refs up in the box, booth, whatever,
yeah,
to signal down.
We walked in at that point.
Okay, well, FSU runs that hurry-up offense. But now, I don't want to actually put it on Taggart so much, because there needed to be one of his assistants up in the booth in his ear, because once you saw the replay, actually, I thought live it was a touchdown.
Me
and
too.
Then once you saw the replay, it was clearly a touchdown. And because they run that fast break offense, they got on the line, and if they had not have hurried their play, I'm 100% confident if they would have just backed up and let the booth upstairs have more time to let the refs know,
right,
hey, we need to review this, but they go hurry up, and one of their O-linemen has a false start, and so instead of a touchdown, not only is it not even first and goal at the 3-inch line, it's first and goal from the 5.5. And then they, I think that's when they got the field goal.
But no, that's when they missed it, wasn't it?
Oh, was it? I think maybe they did.
Or maybe they did get it there. I saw a miss.
I can't remember.
Maybe they went for one after that and missed it.
I can't remember.
That was just another like moment where I was like, oh, God.
Yeah, okay, well, I was going to say it was a 4-point miscue. Maybe it was a 7-point miscue. But what a just despicable debacle of a debut for Willie Taggart. Now, one good, or I guess this is good news for Simmies. His debut at USF was even worse. They lost 51-23 to FCS McNeese State. What do you listeners out there, when you hear McNeese State, is there a certain player or anybody you think of? There's one for me. Cecil the Diesel Collins, who I am sure is still incarcerated in South Florida and has been for like 15 years. Because after he got kicked out of LSU, he went to McNeese State. Cecil the Diesel. He had a bad habit, Harbo, of like eavesdropping in women's windows and helping himself to himself.
It's less of a habit, more of a hobby, I'd say.
Right. If we had sounds, we'd do the drum.
Yeah, right, yeah.
That was good. well, let's go over a few more losers in week one. Kevin Sumlin, Khalil Tate's Heisman hopes dashed. 17 of 34, 197 yards, one touchdown and no picks, but only 8 rushes for 14 yards. He did have a touchdown. Tate got outplayed by Tanner Mangum. Memphis QB Brady White had a great debut, albeit against FCS competition, but that's the same thing with Felipe Franks. Ooh, do I have some crow to eat on Felipe Franks, but not yet. He's got to do it against some FBS competition. And I said all summer, I want to be wrong. I want to be wrong. I was wrong last week. 5 touchdowns, no picks. Brady White, former Arizona State QB for Memphis, did the same. 22 of 28, 358 yards. Back to the losers. Big Ten East, FSU, Miami, Texas. Shout out, Ludicky. What's it like to be 0-1, pal? I was 0-1 last year. It was the first time Florida had lost an opener since 89. Ole Miss, 24-19 on the artificial turf. I remember the exact place where I was for that one. I think I can tell you where I was for like every Gator game the last 40
I'm
years.
I'm sure, man.
And Michigan was that's losers. That's a big loss. But Notre Dame is a good team. I don't know that I have them 11 this week in my power. Here, let me give you my top 10 real quick.
Okay.
One Bama, two Clemson, three Ohio State, four Georgia, five Wisconsin, six Auburn, seven Oklahoma. Oklahoma looked great. Great. Wow, did they look good. I watched until it was like 35-0, and then I moved to other games. Maryland, Texas. Caught a little bit of South Kakalaki. Stanford, 8. Rough first half last week. Lost that over pick, but they got it going in the second half. Costello got going. 4-1 TDINT ratio. Look, Rocky Long had a great plan for San Diego State. Scrappy, underrated squad, by the way. They'll have a good year. And, I mean, he was putting like at least 8 in the box, sometimes 9. And I guess that's what teams are going to do to Stanford and Bryce Love. But, look, David Shaw and a friend of the program, both Stanford's and Game Score, pointed this out to me. He really has the establish the run at any and all cost, you know, which kind of reminds me of Dan Reeves from the Falcons days. He didn't care if Jamal Anderson got only 2 yards on first down. He didn't care. That was a success to him. And I can't deal with that. And this unnamed friend of the show is not happy with it either. Washington 9, I don't know if they need to be 9. They should be higher. That was a hell of a game. What a win for Auburn. That was a bad beat for me. We'll go over that at length here shortly. And I'll give you the rest of my top 25. My big winners of week one. Eric Dungy. What a freaking stud. And what the hell was Dino Babers thinking in the third quarter? We have so much to talk about, but we got my man Jay Greason coming. And it's my birthday. So I need to walk next door and get my first Budweiser since Sunday. And I'm going to do that. We'll be back with Jay Greason. Listen to some Sun Dogs. But stay tuned. We got a I hate when people go, we have a great show coming up today. I know if it's going to be a great show? I think we have a good show
coming. We can feel it in the air.
Yeah, we have a good show coming today. Back in a few. Welcome back, folks. Games Galore 48. Let's get to our featured guest joining us from Chattanooga. You can follow him on Twitter at Jay Greason. That's J-G-R-E-E-S-O-N, and then Times Free Press, so T-F-P, at Jay Greason, T-F-P. He is a columnist for the Chattanooga Times Free Press and the co-host of Press Row Monday through Friday and on ESPN Chattanooga 105.1 FM. What is going on, brother?
Not much, my man. I'm just, you know how this is. We find a way to plow through the summer, and for guys who do what you and I do and who love what you and I love, this is like December 21st. I mean, maybe even 24th, because the NFL starts tonight. Your Dirty Birds are on the TV. I mean, it's a glorious time to be involved.
Absolutely. And in Jay's column last week, 5-1 against the spread. He's documented, like, help me, like 62% and change over the last 4 or 5 years. Gave us some great picks, a number of football weekends. last year. He's an Auburn Tiger alum, and that was the best game of the weekend. And a hell of a game. I thought Stidham and Browning both looked very good. I thought Auburn's D-line was sensational. I thought Washington's offense was unstoppable between the 20s in the second half. But, man, three deep red zone trips and only 3 points. And not only did I have Washington plus three, but one of my accounts got kind of cute and had Auburn all the way down to pick 'em before game time, while another had it at plus three. So I got a little of Auburn pick 'em and you know, pressed my Washington plus three. And if that fat-ass left-footed kicker doesn't miss that chip shot, I hit them both.
Yeah, oh, no, absolutely. And here's the thing. This is one of those rare games, and I think both of these teams – are contenders. I don't think either one of these teams are Alabama or Clemson, but I think both of those teams are right there in the conversation with everybody else. And here is the takeaway in that. If you're a Washington fan, you are hitting yourself in the head with your shoe while you're cussing Mark Jones from ESPN, unneedlessly, by the way, and you're saying, well, we didn't have our All-American left tackle, and we were empty in a whole bunch of trips in the red zone. Well, if you're an Auburn fan, you're going, you know what? We left two extra points. We missed a chip shot field goal. And the only way Washington moved the football was Jake Browning throwing in a 5-gallon bucket 40 yards down the field. And some dude I've never heard of making one-handed catches left and right. I mean, so they're both sides of this that have positives coming out of it. And Auburn was fortunate enough to win the football game. Gambling aside, if you're an Auburn believer, this one, in my opinion, Brian, gives you a mulligan.
Yeah, totally.
But now it's not a mulligan to lose at home to LSU, who looked great on over the Labor Day weekend. But I think that was more Miami crapping their pants than it was LSU being old school circa 2007 LSU. But Auburn now has a mulligan to be in the conversation. And I want to ask you a question on this. What happens, and pitch this to your podcast fans, what happens if Auburn goes to Georgia and wins by 10? Auburn goes to Alabama and loses by a field goal. Alabama, undefeated number one in the country, goes to the SEC championship game and loses to Georgia on a last-second play. You've got three SEC teams with one loss, all to each other. Could the SEC get three of the four?
Oh, wow. That is such a great question, but it's totally irrelevant because South Carolina's my upset of the year and Georgia's going to lose on Saturday. But that was, wow, that was a great question. That really was an awesome, awesome question that would just drive every non-Southern college football fan stir crazy.
Oh, and we then skip eight and go to like 12 or 16 playoff teams for 2020. I mean, at that point in time, we've got like wild cards and the MAC gets a bid. And I mean, there's just everybody in.
Yeah. Oh, man, that's good stuff. So now Trey Adams, the Washington All-American offensive tackle, who had practiced last Monday, and I read some of Coach Pete's quotes, that he looked great last Monday, and then all of a sudden he didn't look great. I saw an hour or two ago that, I don't know if it was yesterday or today, but he had back surgery, and it's likely season-ending. So that's a big hit for Washington. But Washington is still very, very much alive and kicking and in the picture, and really looking at their schedule, they really only have, in terms of games that they could lose, they've got at Utah next week, week three. They are at Oregon in a tough position because Oregon is coming off an open date with 2 weeks to prepare, and it's a back-to-back road spot for Washington. And not only that, it's their seventh game in 7 weeks. But I would still think that if Washington plays well, they still probably win that game. And then I don't know that at Cal will be much of a challenge, and they got Stanford at home. So Washington is still a player, and certainly Washington fans want to root for Auburn to have a big season. Because, yeah, Washington, I mean, you flew all the way to the South, and if Adams does come back later, you didn't have him, and you get 3 points on three red zone trips. So, okay, who was the biggest loser of week one in your mind? I mean, we could go everywhere. We could go Sumlin, Taggart, Miami, FSU, Herman, Texas, Michigan, Harbaugh. Who took the biggest, fattest L, in your opinion, in week one?
Well, I don't want to disappoint you because I know how giddy you being the gator-chomping Florida
We're going to Tallahassee, I can tell.
Yes. No, I'm not. I'm not going there, but it certainly makes sense to go there. I'm going to Texas, man.
Sure.
I mean, Maryland has won two games against Power 5 competition or against ranked opponents in their last 24. Both of those are Texas, and both of those are in Tom Herman's first 14 games. That is not the feel-good vibe reverberations that we all thought when Texas landed Tom Herman, and everybody in America is going, they made just a money hire. So you're now looking at Texas. They're 7-7 under Herman. You're wondering what the strength of this football team is, because last year was the defense. That Maryland team is going to end the year battling for a spot in the New Orleans Bowl or whatever the bottom-tier Big Ten qualifying bowl scenario is. And Texas is going to – I mean, I don't know. I mean, you're now looking around going, was Charlie Strong really all that bad? I mean, yes, the same questions could be asked in Tallahassee in the sense that they're looking up and going, we just ran Jimbo Fisher out of town and we brought in a guy who got his pants pulled down and his tail smacked on national television. And every Georgia fan you and I know started nodding their head about midway through the second quarter watching a stoic Mark Richt as his team was getting boat raced. And everybody went, yep, that's the Mark Richt we remember. So, I mean, all of those guys are losers, but the biggest loser, I think, is Tom Herman in Texas.
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't be wrong with any of those options. They were all that I mentioned, you know, Sumlin, Zona, FSU, Miami, Michigan, Harbaugh. Let's flip the script and let's go biggest winners. We already hit on Auburn. I definitely want to talk LSU. I said all summer, you know, they have their lowest expectations since pre-Saban. I mean, I certainly don't remember them having a win total of 7.5 or fewer since I've been in the VegasInsider.com racket since 2000. So, and I always threw out this summer the caveat that unless Joe Burrow is, you know, as advertised and the man, and because they got out of the big lead, his stats weren't flashy. But, man, did he ever pass the eye test for me? I think they've got themselves their best quarterback since that 1 year with Mettenberger. And then I guess we got to go back to Jamarcus's senior year or junior or his last year or whatever when he lit up Notre Dame. What did you see out of LSU? I thought it was typical LSU, but with a pretty good quarterback.
Well, and you're so right, B. I mean, that's a very astute analysis of it in a couple of directions, both direct and indirect. First, the numbers directly, the numbers were not there because they didn't need to be there. But indirectly, especially for a team that all of us have questions about Ed Orgeron and whether he can have sustained success as a head coach because he's just an absolute oaf and a goofball, and he is like the monster that Creole grandmothers tell their grandkids that if they misbehave, it's going to come out of the swamp in on the bayou, is going to pick them up and walk them into the swamp. So that's who Ed Orgeron is.
Tell him about it, JoJo.
I mean,
hey, go Tigers.
But, yeah, go Tigers. I just want to say go Tigers. But When he got on the field, I thought the most important play, if I'm an LSU fan, and the most encouraging play offensively was when he got to the line of scrimmage and looked both directions saw exactly what Miami was going to do, checked to the run, and it became a 50-yard touchdown because he ran it into open space.
Right.
I mean, forget the numbers and the stats. That's a guy on the field making meaningful change to win you a football game. And they haven't had that. Forget Mettenberger, man. Mettenberger, I could have thrown – Mettenberger had Jarvis Landry on one side and Odell Beckham on the other, man. I could have thrown for 3,000 yards in that at the age of 38.
Right.
So, I mean, so no, I think Burrow's a real deal. Here's the other thing, and the rest of the league, because you asked me who I think won the weekend, I'm going to say the SEC West.
Oh, yeah.
Ole Miss boat races Texas Tech. Auburn wins the biggest game of the weekend. Alabama 100% looks the part that we all think Alabama is. And now we got all the talking heads going, saying what you and I have been saying all summer, that if they're going to hand the ball to Tua, this team's going to average 50 points a game, and good luck with that. And then you look up Mississippi State without Nick Fitzgerald, boat races someone. Texas A&M runs it up. I mean, LSU beats Miami. It's the only undefeated division in college football. And they got a couple, three marquee wins. And then you start looking around the rest of the SEC. And a lot of teams have quarterbacks they trust. And that's that. It's been a while since you and I could say that, right,
yes.
Ryan?
Yes. Yeah, and guess what? Mississippi State's got two of them. Thompson can play. Yeah. I mean, he outplayed
Lamar. And
go ahead.
And they've got two guys who are going to be first or second day picks in the NFL draft on the defensive line. I mean, that's how the SEC builds teams that punches everybody else in the face.
Yeah.
I mean, Georgia's defensive line is salty. We know what Alabama is the model everybody's chasing. What does Clemson do to be the model everybody else is chasing in the ACC? They try to be Alabama with a whole bunch of NFL guys in the front seven. LSU does it. Mississippi State now has it. Auburn was unblockable Saturday. I mean, that is what Florida's been that way for years. I mean, even when they were struggling, because they had, like, a one-armed teenage girl from the sister school of the Blind Mary playing quarterback, they still had a defensive line that'd punch you in the face and would tantalize you and lose games 20-13.
Yeah,
it's a scary league right now.
Yeah, I've said Florida wasted, like, two national title level defenses with those offenses that weren't familiar with first downs and touchdowns. So the SEC West goes 7-0, both straight up and against the spread, covered the closing number by an average between the seven of them by 10 points per game. The SEC as a whole, 13-1 straight up, 11-3 against the spread. Who was that SEC team that lost? Did you catch that by chance?
Yeah, I did catch that, and you know what? It's not going to be the last one they lose.
No, and, it's not.
I mean, this is going to expose Butch Jones as being one of the more inferior coaches. I mean, I think a great testament. My number one rule about gauging a head coach and his quality is: does his team outperform the sum of its parts? The legacy defining question is how much better did he leave it than when he got there? And I actually believe we're going to be talking about Butch Jones leaving it worse.
Worse than Dooley?
Than he found it. And he found it from Derek Bleepin' Dooley. Right. How about them apples?
Right. Yes, yes, yes. If I'm catching you off guard here and you didn't see it, no big shakes. No need to. I'll throw out my quick thoughts. Did you see, first off, how well Eric Dungy played for Syracuse at Western Michigan? And then, furthermore, did you see what Dino Babers was doing in the third quarter? Did you catch that? If you didn't, no big deal.
No. Not only did I pay attention to it.
Syracuse is one of your picks?
Wasn't this week. But because I did my picks, I do my picks every Thursday morning at TimesFreePress.com.
Gotcha.
It dang well should have been. Because throw your Twitter handle out there, and I know your regulars probably already know it, but when you threw the stat out there that they were 4-2 with a win over Clemson when the quarterback was healthy a year ago, that's inside knowledge that a lot of people don't recognize.
Yeah, I've called it the most misleading record that I mean, I'm not going to say college football. The most misleading record I can remember ever. I mean, they were 4-8 last year, but they were it was 4-3 actually when Dungy first started having the issue. Hold on, I'm going to their page here. But let's see. Come on, Cuse. Well, here, I'll go ahead and give you my prediction for them right now. They beat FSU next week, and then they are going to beat UConn at home, and they're going to Death Valley for Clemson's revenge game with a 4-0 record. So, yeah, here's what happened with them last year. So they're 4-3 with a win over Clemson in the most vintage letdown scenario you can imagine at eighth ranked and unbeaten Miami. They're a 17-point dog. I hammered them, and they commit 4 turnovers in the first half as a 17-point dog on the road and still had the ball down 8 on the fringe of the red zone in the final minute and easily covered for me. Then they go, after you fly back up to Syracuse, you fly back down to Tallahassee at FSU. Dungy, that's when he got hurt. He missed, like, he came back like mid-second quarter after he got hurt on the first drive, and he played well. They out-yarded FSU that day, 463 to 343, but they missed 2 field goals, including a potential game tire on the game's final play, and they lose by 3. And that injury Dungy got, I don't know if they had shot him up or whatever, where it, you know, he could play through it that day. Well, he didn't play the next 3 games, and they got blown out. So they were 4-3, and they lose 2 nail biters at Miami and at FSU that they easily could have won, and then he's out. So I said all summer that, you know, I thought if Dungy stays healthy, he might be the most important player to any team in America. And so he was.
I love that conversation.
Yeah.
Let's have that conversation.
Yeah.
I love that.
Sure.
Because it, I mean, okay, Tua Tagovailoa is the far and away Heisman front runner, but you know what? If his leg fell off,
26-2 backs him up.
Yes. I mean, 26-2 is backing him up. Exactly right. Jake Fromm was the SEC Freshman of the Year last year. He's a quarterback of maybe the second best team in the country. Same you could say with Kelly Bryant. I mean, you look at all these places and all these teams that are going to win, you start looking around for the most important player, because I'll put Jared Stidham in that conversation now too.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an offense that now has put everything, every egg in that basket. I mean, I love that conversation. And you know what? I mean, they disappointed last week, but if Stanford's going to put 31 points on the board and Bryce Love's going to run for 31 more yards than you and I did, I mean, that's a misleading number. I love the conversation of who's the most important player in college football.
Yeah. Yeah. And, we could sit here and we could flip around in our magazines and think of the best players on each team, and I really doubt we can find one that means more than Eric Dungy. All right, let's get to some 5-1 last week. And I looked over your picks column, and I agree on a couple, but one that I really had not given a whole lot of thought to that you might have talked me into, I'm going to give it a better look. Tell me about that total on the Ohio State University and
right.
Rutgers. And then we would be remiss if we didn't just spend 2 or 3 minutes talking about that shit show of a presser a couple weeks ago. Because, and by the way, we're talking to Jay Greason. Follow him on Twitter at JGreasonFTP. And he had an outstanding column in the Chattanooga Times Free Press about Urban Meyer. And I actually tweeted it out about a week ago. But let's talk about that total that's got you interested as they go. That one's up in Piscataway, isn't it?
No.
Oh, it's at Ohio State. I'm sorry. My fault.
It's in Columbus.
Okay.
And, honestly, is Rutgers not the Big Ten version of Oregon State? And here's the thing. This is the rare situation of a total in the 60s. This morning it was at 62.5, VegasInsider.com, where our good friend Brian Edwards is a senior analyst and does all his great work. But
Are you about to say Rutgers can score zero and it's still going over?
Yes.
I thought
yes.
so.
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. I swear to goodness. I this is the rare over-under in the 60s that I don't care what Rutgers does. Rutgers can punt it 14 times. And I swear to goodness, I think Ohio State will be in 63-0.
Yeah. I can see it. I can see it. And how about the acting head coach going forward on 4th and 2 when it's 70-31, knowing he might be in the mix to get that job, and let me make these boosters happy that laid the number, and let me get it to 77-31.
I love that talking point, and I honestly do, because you and I both know, we both know fat cat boosters at the SEC schools that we either covered or we graduated from, who are in the stands and are blindly betting on Auburn minus 42 this weekend against Alabama State, or Florida against whatever directional school they play a couple weeks from now at homecoming,
fair,
giving up 38.
That's fair.
It is worth your time to pay attention to that, because those guys are the ones buying the skyboxes, and they're not like me betting $100 or $500 a game. Those are the guys putting, you know what, I'm betting $10,000 on Auburn, and I'm buying this skybox for $250,000. And by God, if they cover, especially at home, it is a wise play. I swear to goodness, I think it's a wise play.
Yeah. Yeah. You covered in your column, and you know, we don't need to repeat everything, but you can have the floor and talk as bad about Oscar Meyer as you want for like an hour if you want.
I'm happy to.
Okay.
And here are a couple three things.
Well, wait, let me. All right, you go ahead. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead, Brian.
Well, no, just you go ahead. But eventually, I want you to touch on how long you think he's there, because I think he may quit on them or they may fire him because he's bitter at them. And the people with a brain around there know how foolish he's made them look. But you go ahead on your 3 points. But I don't think he's going to be the coach there next year, was what I was going to say. But let's hear all your stuff.
Well, here is the starting point on that. How does that guy walk back in a locker room and demand accountability, honesty, credibility? And he almost had to have somebody go take the poster down off the wall in the locker room that says, make certain you treat women with respect.
Core values.
Core values, whatever you want to talk about. I mean, go a step further. And yes, the Ohio State recruits itself. The Ohio State is going to get the best college football players in America, and they're going to be in contention year in, year out. I am shocked that only the president realized that the Ohio State's one of the five schools in America that doesn't need Urban Meyer. I mean, they can pick and poke and plug, and as long as you don't hire, Gomer Pyle, Ohio State's going to sell itself, and you are in a position of talent right now that you're going to ride the wave. It is an amazing place that can be above the fray and actually enforce values and be a leader. And they completely, completely turned away from all of that for a guy who truthfully has a history of being as big a dirtbag as anybody since we've seen since Barry Switzer.
I tried to tell my late dad that so many times, but he was just all about the results, which I was too, and you couldn't argue with the results. But I just, throughout his tenure at Florida, I always said, I do not like this SOB. And look, I like cocky. I like arrogant. I'm Steve Spurrier's biggest fan. But he is just, his smugness is so unattractive. Here, I got two questions for you, since you're all the outstanding descriptions of Orgeron you gave. So I'm going to come back to a question about Orgeron and Les, but I'm going to start with, who's more narcissistic, Oscar Meyer or Rick Pitino?
Oh my God, man!
How good is that question?
No, that's a glorious question. I mean, and it's a glorious question that I don't know if there's a right answer.
There isn't. It's a push.
I really need C. Yes, and because here's the thing. But here's the thing about Rick Pitino. He comes out in his book and says, "Well, woe is me. I'm never going to get another coaching job again." And yada yada yada, dude. Rick Pitino invented the game of mass collection of college basketball talent. The Kentucky basketball team in the mid-90s that he had that won the national championship, they had 10 NBA players on it.
They were redshirting NBA players. They were making players redshirt when they were a junior. They were redshirting future NBA players.
For God's sakes, Walter McCarthy was coming off the bench. He had an 8-year NBA career. I mean, dear Lord.
Tommy Heinsohn calls him Walter McCarthy.
Yes. So here's the thing about narcissism, though, in that regard. Narcissistic, I would probably go Pitino, but hypocritical and completely obtuse. And there is no reason, there is no way, shape, or form you can use the word obtuse and not think of that great scene in Shawshank.
Oh yeah.
But then that's Urban Meyer. He is so hypocritical and he's so obtuse. And the only reason he's not viewed as the biggest scumbag in all of college sports.
Timmy Tebow, Timmy Touchdowns?
Absolutely. It's Timmy Jesus, man.
Yeah.
And think about this. If Timmy Jesus had decided and picked
Alabama
Mike Shula instead of Urban Meyer, Mike Shula, Nick Saban doesn't go there and build that.
Or what if
Timmy Tebow? I mean, think about the ramifications of that one decision.
Well, what about Miami Dolphins medical staff telling Saban, we're not confident Dr. James Andrews, because that was one of the worst shoulder injuries Breeze had last regular season game against the Chargers, and so the Dolphins take Dante Culpepper instead of Drew Breeze, and Breeze goes to the Saints. The Saints win the only Super Bowl in franchise history. Saban, Culpepper gets fat and they suck, but if Breeze would have been there, he might have been winning Super Bowls with the Dolphins, and he doesn't go to Bama. Oh yeah, that ramifications from there on that decision as well. God, where, man, there's just so many different things. Get a little Hawaii talk. I mean, my man, Cole
Hey,
go ahead.
Hey, bro. Hey, let's do this. Cause I know you got to wrap this puppy up.
No, we got time.
You go. Okay.
We got plenty of time. You got time.
I'm happy to talk. Cole McDonald, man. Woo. How about that dude?
Woo. How about that JUCO transfer, Cedric Bird? That dude can fly. He reminds me of Jack Jackson and Quezzy Green.
Okay, I like that comparison. And there is nothing better than being a fan of a team that has a guy in the slot who is faster than everybody else in the field, and he just go, all right, he's either going to run a wheel or he's going to run. The jet sweep, or he's going to run the quick bubble screen, and everybody on the other side has to pay attention to it. But here's the thing, man. I looked at the numbers today. If Cole McDonald goes 4 of 22 for 57 yards on Saturday night, he's still averaging 60% completion, 300 yards passing, and 3 touchdowns a game.
9 touchdowns without an interception, 2 rushing touchdowns. He's looked amazing. He's got 3 very good wide receivers. I mean, I know we're only 2 games deep, but this is just shocking. Right. Hawaii was awful last year. Go ahead.
They were awful, and you're 100% right. It's only 2 games deep, but this is not 2 games against Southeastern Louisiana and Birmingham Southern. I mean, Navy normally, I was mildly surprised that Hawaii went on the road and laid the wood to Colorado State, because Hawaii, you know this, Hawaii as a road team is normally trash.
Mm-hmm.
But then they welcomed Navy, and they almost put 60 on the board on Navy.
And Ken Nui Matalolo is as respected a coach as there is in America, really.
Well, hey, bro, you know what got all my respect right there? Give me his name one more time, because that was money.
Oh, bro, I thought I'd never be able to spell it or say it, but I started really betting on them a lot, like 7 or 8 years ago. Not only can I say it, I can spell it, and I call them the Navy Fighting Nui Matalolos.
Well, hey, if I could pronounce that one, never mind spell it, but if I could pronounce that one, I would 100% call him the Navy Nui Matalolos.
You know, I was watching, I went over to some Bama fans' house like third quarter of the Bama game the other night, and I'd had a couple of Budweisers, but before the game was over, they had me pronouncing Tua's last name correctly, but the next day it was just totally gone, and I'm going to stick with Tua.
All right, well, here's the thing about working in SEC country. It's Tungavaloa, so I got that one.
Oh, that's actually easy. Just say Tungavaloa. Tungavaloa.
Tungavaloa. Yeah.
Tua Tungavaloa.
And I don't know where the mysterious N comes in his pronunciation. It's like the military rank of colonel that has an R in it somehow. So I mean, I just shrug my shoulders and say, okay. I mean, it's his name. He can pronounce it however he wants to. But Tungavaloa, it is Tungavaloa.
You know, I'm disappointed in myself for leaving Chip Kelly off the loser list from last week. And not really shocking to me, because I think Mora left him a mess. I think it's going to take a while. I mean, I said that all summer. In fact, I picked him to go 5-7. But, wow. I wonder if he has ever been catching 30 points his whole career. But, you know how Taggart had that bad debut at USF, he got beat 51-23 by McNeese State. And by the way, when you hear the school McNeese State, is there like one former player that you think of by chance that comes to you?
Not quickly.
Cecil the Diesel Collins.
totally
random out of nowhere. But anyway, so okay. we won't get into Cecil, but I'm sure he's heavily incarcerated in South Florida still. But
and heavy. That's a dude who's weighing 400 pounds. Right,
yes,
now.
No
doubt about it.
Yes, for sure. But you know, Chip Kelly had a bad debut at Oregon too. You'll remember this because they barely got across. They didn't get across the 50 till mid fourth quarter. They came to the Smurf turf and Chris Peterson put it on them. The final was only 19-8, but like Boise had like 5 field goals of less than 30 yards, and that's the night LeGarrette Blount lost his mind. So Taggart had a bad debut, but he's done it before and turned it around. Chip Kelly's had a bad debut and turned it around, but my goodness, they're catching 30. And man, say what you want about, and I think FAU will still be good this year, but I mean, there might not have been a team more impressive. I mean, obviously Auburn and Washington had the heavyweight game, but in terms of teams, I mean, Oklahoma, I mean, I didn't see that coming. Like, by that, Oklahoma looked great last week. Did you watch much of that one?
I watched every bit of it. One of my 6 picks last week was Oklahoma FAU over. I mean, it could have been over a million. It didn't matter. I mean, at that point, it was a cash register, and every time you turned around, Oklahoma was scoring a 45-yard touchdown.
Yeah.
But, first, there's so many things to look at to that game. First and foremost, I think Lincoln Riley has the most quarterback-friendly offense in football. And I'm not talking high school. I'm not talking college. I'm not even talking NFL. I'm talking football. That guy, if my kid, I have a son who's going to turn 11 tomorrow. He's got a flag football game on Saturday. If he grew up to be a 5-star quarterback recruit.
He's playing for Lincoln Riley?
My first call is to Lincoln Riley. Well, actually, my second call. My first call is to Auburn and saying, y'all need to come up here and make certain somebody gets paid, because I paid y'all a lot of money to get a degree. And then – And then the second call is, all right, Lincoln Riley, how can you get this dude to the NFL? I mean,
You think NFL's interest? I go back to East Carolina with him, man. I mean, I loved when Ruffin McNeil would just let him do his thing. He was like 26, and he had Shane Carden and Justin Hardy, Falcon, right, just blowing the record. I mean, Shane Carden broke every David Garrard record, and when Stoops hired him, I was like, I said that whole summer that was the best offseason assistant hire. Yeah, I love the guy, man.
And maybe he's not going to train NFL dudes, but by God, he can get you in a position where you're going to have a super fun time as a quarterback in college. Because they, I mean, honestly, though, and you bring up a great question about Chip Kelly, a great question. And I don't know, I mean, what an awful position to be in. You're looking up and you're catching 30, and what a great number Vegas dropped in. And we hadn't even talked about the overall philosophy of going into week two about over whether it's reality or it's overreaction. I mean, is Arizona terrible or did they have a bad game? Is UCLA struggling or is Oklahoma going to put 70 on them too? You know, I mean, this is such a catch 22 week that the only thing I can tell your podcast listeners, trust what you believe on this one, because in most situations, don't you think a normal Oklahoma UCLA line would be 22.5?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. But I mean, I don't think that Cincinnati, that's a middle of the pack AAC team that went out west and beat you. And when we talk about, like, so we had a few teams such as Hawaii and Colorado State to like overreact to last week, and I just don't think I reacted enough. Now I hammered the over. In fact, I'll probably take every over of Hawaii until it gets in the 80s, or we see their offense slow down, or one of those trio receivers or McDonald gets injured. Knock on wood. I hope like heck it doesn't happen. But I knew I should have taken Colorado -7, but I didn't want to overreact. And right. I did personally get a little bit of Hawaii at kind of the last minute last week because I saw Alabama first quarter line -7 +110 and about had a stroke and got some of that to kind of get me out of my Washington hole. And so I got big on the Navy Hawaii over, and I didn't want to, like, I don't like to have the same amount on a side total of the same game, and I had a lot on Hawaii Navy over, so I didn't get much of Hawaii. But it should have been clear to us from that one game in Fort Collins that we should have faded Colorado State, and Hawaii being back at home, having a game under its belt as a double-digit home dog. So anyway, I don't know that I reacted enough to those results in week zero, as I guess we call it. All right, Jay went 5-1 last weekend. Throw us another pick or two.
All right. We talked about I'm laying the 16.5 Hawaii to Rice. I think Rice is terrible. Here's one that not a lot of people may be paying attention to. UNLV is going to be sneaky good this year. Love their new coaching staff. They've got a 4-star quarterback who is a sophomore who played last year as a freshman from a high profile. Bishop Gorman,
he's from Sanchez's high school. Okay.
Yes. Yes. So, and he runs the spread. They ran for 303 yards last week against USC.
Hey, answer me this, Jay, because I know I did read in your article you were on that game, and I know Lexington Thomas is UNLV's stud running back, and I, you know, we get these alerts on my live odds feed with VI, and I just, like, during Saturday afternoon, I saw that it said he was questionable to return in the second half. Did they run for? Did he come back and play, or did they still run the ball without their stud running back on him? And I know it was 19-14 going to the fourth.
Right. I think he came back and got in the game, but he did not have the expectation of. And I think he's cleared to play this week.
And they still ran for 300 yards without him having. Yes. Gotcha.
Against a UTEP team that is just gross. I mean, they're trash. We talked about the Ohio State Rutgers over, which I like. Here's a sneaky one I love. Wyoming coming to Missouri. Wyoming gave up 41 points to a Washington State pass-happy offense that had to completely retool from a year ago. You don't think Drew Locke and those boys giving up 17 or 18? Drew Locke, mark this down. Not only does that one cover, Drew Locke is your SEC Offensive Player of the Week with 400-plus passing yards next week.
All right, let's go. And before we go to my Gators, obviously you faded USC with success last week. I got Stanford 3.5 on Sunday night and bought it to 3. This line's already up to 6. I mean, I'm already in a good position. And hell, I'd played a little bit of it, games of the year in the summer. But now up to 6, I hate six, when I've already got it at a better number. I hate telling listeners, oh, still play it. And then, you know, they win by 4 or 5 and then you know.
Right.
Do you still like Stanford minus 6 or did you like them to begin with?
I don't like Stanford. If it gets to 7, I assuredly don't like Stanford. And here's why. I would be worried about they couldn't get Bryce Love off against San Diego State. And no, do I think Stanford's better? Yes. Are they playing at home? Yes. Do I like the big play wide receiver? Absolutely. Do I think David Shaw knows exactly what he's doing and what he wants from his football team? Assuredly so. But there are some concerns there where you could not physically line it up and run it between the tackles with the best running back in college football against San Diego State. And I can assure you the front 7 of USC is better than what San Diego State trotted out there. I love you being on it at 3. It gets to 7. I got a question for you, though, flipping it back. How much would that line have to spread to where you would try to double dip it?
Oh, at 7, I would definitely come back with about 30% of what I have on Stanford minus 3. Hell, I might would just do it at 6. I haven't done it yet, but I mean, a 3-6 or 3-7 hedge is pretty good, but I mean, for less, a lot less, you know, percent. Now, Rocky Long's had a good plan, and I mean, they had 9 people in the box on some plays. I like Shaw. I mean, you look at his results, but he does kind of have a tendency to just establish the run at all freaking cost. Once he started trusting Costello and letting him get loose a little bit in the second half, you know, he threw 4 touchdowns. Yeah, and J.J. Arcega-Whiteside is the man. And my guy, Caden Smith, whose family lives right down the street from me, and I know him pretty well, keep an eye on him. You might not remember those 2 spectacular touchdown catches he had in the Pac-12 title game. He only got 2 catches for 13 yards last week, but he'll have a big season. All right, so look, it was FCS competition, Charleston Southern, but when you're as down on Felipe Franks as I've been, and look, I've always said he's got the size, a great arm, and good athleticism. I know where he's from. I know he didn't get coached well in high school. And when you were when you were saying earlier about Ohio State could hire, I forget the verbiage you used, but I almost said McElwain or Zook. And so that's who Franks is.
Right.
Franks been coached by McElwain and Needlemeyer, Nussmeyer, and now he's getting some QB whispering from Mullen. Look, I'm not going to overreact to it, but 5 touchdowns, no picks, and seeing him with confidence, and Kentucky's quarterbacks struggled, and Florida has still got a pretty darn good Florida defense. I mean, I don't even know that Franks has to play that good and Florida still covers 14 because I think they're going to force turnovers. Any thoughts there, or do you still just not trust Florida's offense to be laying a double-digit number?
No, you know how we do this. You lay your picks out, and I need one more week of Felipe Franks before I'm going to buy. Now, if we're talking stocks, then my view on Dan Mullen, he's Apple, man. I mean, I'm not saying he's Saban good, but what he was able to generate in Starkville, I mean, you and I followed the SEC for decades now. And before he got there, Starkville was a redneck Vandy. And he was able to. They were in the national championship hunt, for Christ's sake.
They were number one for a month.
I know. I mean, holy buckets, man. I mean, what are you telling me? And if he gets Felipe Franks even too good, I don't care what the record says. He's my coach of the year front runner. And I know that you love, and I want to talk about Georgia, South Carolina next. I know you love the Gamecocks on Saturday. I think the only team that has a chance to in the East to beat Georgia
is Florida.
Is your Gators? Yes.
Well, we all know that when we go to Jacksonville, it's advantage Gators, and it's been that way since that HBC rolled up in there in 1990 and went 11-1. Now,
how much do we miss him?
I mean,
God Almighty, man, this game is supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be entertainment. It's not supposed to be Nick Saban insulting a perfectly fine question from Maria Taylor.
Perfectly fine question.
Perfectly fine. It wasn't even that even really offensive. And he got his jockstrap in a bunch. And man, how glorious and how big of a media hero would she have been if she had? Because she's like 5'11" or 6 feet. If she'd have like leaned down and looked at him and patted him on his coiffed hair and said, "Why don't you just relax, little man?" I mean,
oh my God, I would have given half of my bank account to watch that live on national television.
No, are you kidding me? Well, I mean, think about the ripple effects of that. Well, and I'm tired of you asking about it. And if she, Marie Taylor, leaned down and went, "Why don't you just relax, little fella?"
And started just playing with his hair, getting it all out of sorts. that would be great.
We missed the head ball coach. I mean, and the head ball coach was unbelievably harsh on Auburn. I mean, the glorious line when we had the fire at the library, and he said, "It's a doggone shame because
all colored books
hadn't been colored in yet." Yeah. I mean, he got it, man. He got it. He got that this was what we wanted to go to on Saturdays away from our day jobs and the stresses of, hey, how are our kids doing? And am I being a good dad and all the other stuff that comes with it, man? I mean, golly, we missed that dude.
Yeah. Well, maybe the spring league will be fun. He used to like to do bandit ball, 1, 2, 3, bandit ball.
Yeah. Call ball plays.
I mean, you know, they're going to put some lines up on this new league. So maybe we'll have some, fun with that. All right, before we get you out of here, and by the way, you've been listening to the comedy and the greatness of one Jay Greeson. You can follow him on Twitter at Jay Greeson. That's GREESON. And then TFP, which stands for Times Free Press. You can check out his picks column at the Times Free Press website. Is it just TFM.com?
Times Free Press. TimesFreePress.com.
There we go. And you can check him out on Press Row, ESPN Chattanooga, 105.1 FM, 3 to 6 Eastern, Monday through Friday. All right, your thoughts on South Kakalaki and Georgia. I mean, South Carolina, they got three veteran running backs that are healthy. They've got a must-champ defensive game plan without Debo and Bryson Allen Williams, who are both healthy now. They went pretty toe-to-toe with Georgia last year. I thought it was a little closer than the 24-10 final suggested. They're at home where they're 54-16 straight up in the past decade, and a lot of those L's were in that 3-9 debacle 3 years ago. I not only do I think South Carolina's going to win, I think they might kick that ass by two touchdowns or better. All right, what say you?
I know some Georgia folks. Actually, you've told your listeners that I went to Auburn. I married a beautiful lady who graduated from Georgia. We have a all-white English bulldog that looks exactly like Uga, but his name is Bo Jackson. So
I thought you were going to say his name's Vince.
No, his name is Bo Jackson, and it's not Bo. It's not Jackson. It's Bo Jackson.
Oh, gotcha.
But, there are, I know there are a lot of Georgia people who are nervous about this. And so I understand your confidence. I look at this, and I'm gonna dial it back to your hero and mine, the old ball coach. I made a whole lot of money betting in the 90s, always betting on Steve Spurrier, because I knew front to back, he had 14 of the best 20 players on the football field almost every time he lined it up. And you're right. The South Carolina is experienced in the backfield. I love Debo Samuel. I think Jake Bentley is an absolute great college quarterback. But start clicking them all. And the talent level for Georgia is just the number I saw in the last 2 years, Georgia's run for almost 600 yards on the ground. South Carolina's run for fewer than 80. And it is this was not one of my picks. I know you've pushed your chips in. I love your commitment to South Carolina over the win total. This one scares me at that 10 to 12 one way or another backdoor cover number in both directions. Mm-hmm. I mean, you think South Carolina is going to win outright, and the next time I come on here, if they do, that needs to be the first thing we talk about. But this one just leaves me completely and totally baffled. You could tell me any score. You could tell me 42 to 10. And then you could tell me either direction. And it would not totally shock me, considering the games in Columbia. And those are the games I completely stay away from.
2010, Alabama defending national champion, unbeaten, coming into Columbia, and HBC coached Stephen Garcia up to have the game of his existence and three other lifetimes if he gets them. And they beat Alabama 35-21. I think Bentley has that breakout game, and it's not just going to be Debo. It's going to be Brian Mama Can't Spell Edwards, the other receiver, and South Kakalaki will get the W, I believe. And Jay is not saying no or yes. He's passing.
No,
you can pass on every game.
I know.
Go ahead.
Yes. I am amazingly vanilla.
That's okay.
On this one, I'm amazingly interested.
Yeah,
but I, you know how this goes.
Sure,
I have zero feel on what's going to happen in this one.
I think Jake Bentley plays the best game of his career. We shall see, man. I think we kept you for like an hour, and it was an hour of greatness. And I appreciate your time. It was fun. Follow Jay at Jay Greason. TFP, as in Times Free Press. He went 5-1 on his picks last week. You can check out his Thursday column with all his picks at timesfreepress.com, and check him out on ESPN Chattanooga 105.1 FM from 3 to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday. Press Row. Enjoyed it. As always, we'll do it again in the next 3 to 5 weeks.
All right, Brian. Thanks as always, brother.
All right, buddy. Be good. All right, let's take a break. Folks, Falcons kickoff is getting close. Games galore, 48. I've only had one Budweiser. I need another. We might have a guest visitor in Jim Rohde any minute, perhaps. Big Blue fan. Captain of BBN. We'll be back. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back. Games Galore 48. Hope you enjoyed the interview with Jay Greason. I think we covered a lot of ground, and he's a character. He's fun, and he's good. He's very
holy
good.
Buckets, man.
Holy buckets. Bleeping. He's got some good lingo. He's got some really good lingo. And when he said obtuse, I knew that was from a movie, and I remember Shawshank Redemption when the main character is calling the warden. How could you be so obtuse? And that's what he threw him in the freaking the hole for like 3 months. How could you be so obtuse? All right. Alabama, folks, is the real deal. We all know that. He was very impressed with my pronunciation of Nui Matalolo. He liked that.
Nui Matalolo.
Ken Nui Matalolo. I can spell it too. Alabama, we know, is legit. They're number one, the uno in my power rankings. However, Sabes has a tendency to not cover laying these big numbers. And by the way, Arkansas State is pretty good. We got a really good quarterback in Justice Hansen. A lot of people thought they, including Phil Steele, thought they were the best team in the Sun Belt coming into the year. I just was waiting to see on App State, because when you lose a four-year starter like Taylor Lamb, just a total badass, you know, it's just, I got to wait and see. Well, that quarterback, Zach Thomas, the new quarterback for the Mountaineers, I would say he passed his first career road. Well, actually, you know what? I think Lamb was hurt one game. I think I remember, I'm going to my App State page now, by the way. I think I read where Thomas did have, no, he didn't. Lamb didn't miss any game. I don't know if Lamb missed a game in 4 years. So, yeah, Zach Thomas had only played, you know, garbage time, 6 of 10 for 33 yards last year. And, boy, was he legit. What a game he had. I mean, you're going into Beaver Stadium. I think they hold 100,000 at Penn State. Here, I'll be able to tell you right here. Another great feature.
100,000?
Another great feature of Phil Steele's magazine. He tells you exactly how many people each stadium holds. And Beaver Stadium holds 106,572, and they filled it to capacity 100.1% last year. So he went in front of 100,000 plus and balled out. And we knew they had Jalen Moore coming back, and Jalen Moore is an absolute beast. First team Sun Belt selection twice, and is probably going to be close to getting Marcus Cox's career school record. By the way, Bud Galloway's in town. App State product. I need to call him or text him to come drink with me on my birthday, folks. We're going to have to wrap this seg up pretty soon, because my Falcons are kicking off in like 20 minutes. But there is I wanted to talk about Sabes and his tendency not to cover in games like this. And they, at last look, were 36.5 at home against Arky State, the Red Wolves. Okay, here's some stats for you. Since 2012, when Alabama is laying 28.5 points or more, they are, oh wait, is this the non-conference one? My handwriting is all screwed up. I might need to go to my Twitter. Okay, wait. They're 4-13, their last 17 against the spread, laying 35 or more. Yeah, here's the non-conference one, laying 25.5 or more since 2010. Alabama's 5-15-1 against the spread. And then, whether it's home, away, conference, non-con, whatever, since 2012, when they're laying 28.5 or more, they're 6-15-1 against the spread. So, not good history laying big numbers like this. I'm not endorsing anything there. Although our friend of the show, Christopher Smith, loves Arkansas State this week. I will point that out. And by the way, I've got a couple of new gigs. Well, let me see if I got a confirmation email. But I got a call today from the Golic and Wingo producer, and I believe I'm going to be a guest on their show tomorrow morning at 8:05 a.m.
Check it out.
And I tell you what, if I go home early tonight on my birthday, to be up that early for this,
right?
And I don't get a call from them, oh boy.
Oh.
Oh boy, that producer's gonna have some fucking questions to answer. Cause, I think we pretty much clarify. I mean, he wanted me to send him some things so that Golic and Wingo could look at them or whatever. And
right.
Because I'm just Allison Turner. Thanks, Allison, by the way. Producer for the Levitard Show, old friend. She referred me to Dan Stansick. But so I might be on Golic and Wingo every Friday moving forward. At 9:05 a.m. Eastern, 8:05 a.m. where I live.
Those are going to be some rough Fridays.
Right. Right. No. Especially, and like, after the first set of emails, that and he comes back, well, we mostly talk NFL. And I'm like, oh, shit. Maybe I'm
you
not
got
your
that,
guy.
You got NFL.
No, I didn't say that. You know what? It actually, my first thought was, you know what? This is going to make me prep harder for NFL, there and I'm going to have a much better NFL year. Now, it might hurt my college. No, it won't. No.
No.
I get my college figured out by Sunday night, or as long as I'm not doing Sunday Funday.
You had your college figured out 3 months ago.
Yeah, right. You're right. You're right. You're right. You're right. All right, so I gave you the saves stats. Some FBS, FCS lines that not many books have that may apply to your school. Tennessee's 37.5 against East Tennessee State, which is coached by Randy Sanders, former longtime quarterback coach for Fulmer at Tennessee, and then has spent the last decade and change on the Kentucky staff for a while. I believe that was during Rich Brooks's tenure, maybe even a little bit of Joker Phillips' tenure, and he was at FSU for a little while. Ole Miss is 29.5 against Southern Illinois. I don't know anything about Southern Illinois. I got to look and see what they did last week. They probably played an FCS team. But if a total gets hung on this, I'm almost, not to the extent with Hawaii, I'm not that far with Ole Miss, but any totals of 65 or fewer is an over for Ole Miss. Anything 75 or fewer with Hawaii is an automatic over until we see results differently. I mean, we're 2-0 with the over on Hawaii, 1-0 with Ole Miss. So now if we get a low-scoring game, I may change this premise. But until an under cashes in an Ole Miss-Hawaii game, just don't – I mean, maybe – yeah, check the injuries. You know, if McDonald or the three wide receivers for Hawaii are hurt, that changes things. But as long as A.J. Brown and Metcalf and what's the other one's name? DeMarcus Lodge. As long as those guys and Tamu are help, man, Jordan Tamu, that some bitch can play. He's better than Patterson, maybe. He looked better than him last week. You let me talk about your quarterback like that, Harbaugh?
I heard it. I just said that. I agree with you.
Right. So anyhow, the other FBS lines, the Cuse is 43.5 to Wagner. So we didn't even really get into what Dino Babers was doing. I forget what Syracuse was up by at halftime. They were up like 38-7 or something. And Dungy had the injury issues that we talked about earlier where he missed the last three games. So he starts the other guy in the second half, and they go like 3 and out. Or I mean, they might have gotten a few first downs here and there. And I was kind of finishing up my writing on Friday. It was an early kick. It was a 6 p.m. Eastern kick, so that's 5 our time central. I was still doing my SEC notebook, but I'm mainly paying attention. And all of a sudden, Western Michigan scores like 3 touchdowns in a row. And so it's like, I don't know. And I might have been wrong on the 38-7, but it was a less than, I want to say they cut it to 12 with 3 touchdowns in a row, 21 unanswered. And at that point, and I didn't have any dog in the fight. I've just been high on Syracuse and talked good about him, so I'm kind of rooting for him. And I like Dino Babers. But Dino, like, did not even put Dungy back in the game. We're still, like, late for third quarter. I mean, this is a ball game now. I mean, it was game, set, match. Your quarterback's done for the game. I mean, take your shoulder pads off. Leave them in the freaking locker room. I mean, that's not what happened, but... And the next thing you know, it's a 2-possession game, and he still doesn't put Dungy back in. So at that point, I'm doing Twitter searches on Dungy, and all the Syracuse beat writers, or at least one, I believe his name is Brent Axe. I think Syracuse.com or SyracuseSports.com. So I'm reading his tweets, and he's saying that he's on the sidelines being told that Dungy's not hurt. They're just resting him. But Babers didn't put him back in when they cut it to less than 2 touchdowns. Well, guess what? They don't score. Western Michigan goes and scores again. It's a one-possession game. Then he puts Dungy back in, and he just marches them right down the field for a touchdown. And they end up winning 55-42. But Dino, bro, I know, I'm all about you keeping Dungy healthy. But my goodness, in the third quarter, they've cut it to less than two possessions in a contest that was over. Game, set, match. I mean, it was starting to remind me, and Gator fans will remember, of the Rodney Brewer game, which I believe was 85. Florida is up 28, either zip or 7. And by the way, Rodney Brewer went on to have an excellent baseball career for the Cardinals, or most of his career with the Cardinals. Baseball, obviously, St. Louis. But he was Kerwin's backup, and Brewer was highly recruited. And I think Galen Hall just wanted to keep him engaged, kind of like Saves. With, oh, how great was that if Maria would have said that to Saban? He goes, calm down, little man. I'm good with that a bit if he'd have done that. Because she does sky over his ass. That's why he was so bitter. But it was starting to remind me of the Rodney Brewer game. They put Rodney Brewer in. I think Galen wanted to keep him engaged because he was a stud baseball player, too, and he had a lot of talent. And Florida goes 3-and-out. Rutgers goes and scores. I think that made it 28-7. Okay, because it was 28-0, they had yanked him. Okay, Brewer comes back out, pick six, and it's 28-14. Galen puts Brewer back in there. Another effing pick six. I was there. I was at this game. 28-21. Yeah, well, you can't call it like the choke at Doak because I was in college and it's the Florida-FSU rivalry. But then he puts Kerwin back in, but we don't score. Rutgers scores. And this was before overtime. I think it was 85, maybe 86. And we tie Rutgers 28 all. And that's what, you know, Galen Hall putting Brewer back in, Babers sticking with that backup instead of Dungy. It was starting to remind me of the Rodney Brewer game last week. But fortunately, it did not go like that. All right, some quick notes, and then we'll get out of here. Oh, some other FBS, FCS. Auburn minus 50.5 against Alabama State. West Virginia, the Will Greers, minus 35.5 versus Youngstown State. FSU is 34 against Samford. Samford has a quarterback, and I had his name written down. Damn it. What the? Where? I know I wrote it down. Anyway, this guy is on pace to break all of Steve McNair's FCS career numbers. So FSU, they're obviously on a super short week. I mean, I hate betting a team blindly. I really don't know anything about. But I have read a little bit. Samford has been to the FCS playoffs back-to-back years. They got a QB that, you know, if he stays healthy and plays like he's played the last couple of years, is going to break Steve McNair's all-time FCS career passing yardage stats. And the way FSU looked the other night, super short week, plus 34 or 35. I'm not saying, you know, any of the mounts of my other picks, but yeah, I might be interested in a little Samford there. Vandy linebacker Jordan Griffin is questionable versus Nevada. Vandy was minus 9 at last look. Nice win for Vandy, 35-7 over the Stock Stills last week. The true freshman for Rutgers, who appears is just going to be their man the next 4 years, Archer Sitkowski, 20 of 29 for 205 yards. Last week, but one touchdown and three picks. But RU outgained Texas Tech 423 to 169 total yardage. Former Bama quarterback, former Arizona State quarterback, Blake Barnett, nice debut at USF, 24 of 34, 305 yards, three touchdowns, no picks, eight carries, 31 yards, one touchdown. USF, 3.5-point home dog to Ja Tech and the Paul Johnsons. Pretty good little game, mid-major-ish game up in Ohio with Cincy and Miami of Ohio. Pick 'em. My guy Gus Ragland last week, 25 of 46, 357 yards, three touchdowns, no picks. He's got an insane career TDI and T ratio that I'm sure loyal listeners recall me talking about last year. Yeah, Joe Burrow passed my eye test. Tanner Mangum, horrible season last year. After a really good one, his career started with a Hail Mary pass to beat Nebraska in Lincoln after Taysom Hill got hurt. Oh, and I was talking about other gig. I'm writing a gambling column at NOLA.com about the Saints, and my first article got posted this week. I'm on Verno's show tomorrow, 12:30 Central. Westmore in Arkansas has got a new station. Check my Twitter. I'll tweet it out before I go on there at noon tomorrow. I think I'm on Golic and Wingo tomorrow, way too freaking early with a birthday hangover, 8:05 a.m. Central, but I'm not sure it's on TV. I'm thinking they have a fourth hour that's maybe not televised that just is on ESPN Radio and their podcast, because I was setting my DVR, and it ends when I'm supposed to be coming on. Talked about Cole McDonald, stud, Heisman favorite. Kidding, only two games deep. Dungy does have 80-1 Heisman odds, though. I don't know if he can stay healthy. He runs it too much. Remember my stat about Harbaugh's alma mater, Eastern Michigan, 11-1 against the spread last 12 as a road dog, plus 16.5 at Purdue. By that half hook point to the key number of 17. I'll have more picks. Check them out at BrianEdwardsSports.com. You can follow me on Twitter at VegasBEdwards. Oh, I took some Steelers Browns notes I can share with you. Browns, home dogs under Hugh Jackson, 3-11 against the spread. Road favorites, Steelers, Tomlin, 18-25-1 against the spread. Pittsburgh's favored by 4. If you missed it earlier, SEC West, 7-0, both straight up and against the spread. Covered against the closing line by an average of 10 points per game. SEC 13-1 straight up, 11-3 against the spread. Who's the big loser, Harbo, in the SEC?
Tennessee.
There's so many places I'd rather be. It's the last time I'm ever singing. I'll leave that to Will Haraway and the Sun Doggy Dogs. Good luck with your picks. You follow our Games Galore pod. We have a little side Twitter account, a la Kevin Durant. No, I'm kidding. But I do tweet from the Games Galore Twitter. I think it's just at Games Galore or at Games Galore Pod. If you want to follow that, at Vegas B. Edwards is me. Follow SunsetPicturesCompany.com on... Did you just do a little video of me that's going to be on the
Sunset? I might have.
Is it on the Insta page?
It's on the Insta.
Oh, sweet. Check it out. SunsetPicturesCompany.com's Insta page. Might have some video of me drinking a Budweiser on the microphone on my birthday. Harbo's going to have a baby soon, folks. Real soon.
Real soon.
His father-in-law is making his Swamp debut this week. He wanted to be a guest on this segment.
He got bumped. He's
upset. Was supposed to come in live, and he no-showed us. No, Jimmy, we're not calling you. You're supposed to come up here and buy me a drink or two on my birthday, and you're going to the Swamp to take it on the chin. And and your mother-in-law, Shelly. Shout out, Shelly. Shelly's going to be in the Swamp. Shelly, take pictures of Jim Rohde in the Swamp with all his Kentucky gear on for me, please.
I hope he survives.
You know what he told me? He goes, if we win, you'll get lots of pictures. This ain't 86, bro. They haven't won in Gainesville since 79.
That's a long time.
Oh, and one last thing. I gave you the stat earlier. Since 75, FSU and Miami have not both been 0-1. Here's a stat for you. The last team that was 0-1 to win the national title, Miami in 83. You know that loss, Harbo? At the Swamp.
At the Swamp.
How do I know? Because I was there.
Dun, dun, dun.
And it was cream cheese treatment, but Howard Schnellenberger called a timeout like 3 seconds left after like a 20-yard pass to get Miami in field goal range, and they kick like a 45-yard field goal in the last play of the game to dodge the bagel, to dodge the cream cheese treatment. We won 28-3, but I left the Swamp as a 9-year-old extremely unsatisfied. Little did I know that team would go on to win the national title. I wanted the bagel, and I hated Schnellenberger for that. All right, I think we've covered it all. Follow Jay Greason on Twitter. And hope you enjoyed the show. Here's Will Haraway, Lee Haraway, and the Sun Doggy Dogs. Talk to you next week. I'll have more picks up. Check them out, BrianEdwardsSports.com.
This is a Rush the Field quick fix on Radio Influence.
Nick Saban was a bit of a jerk this weekend, Chris, when he overreacted to Maria Taylor from ESPN's post-game question about what he thought about his quarterbacks after that game. And then he has to come out and say and call her and apologize. And then after all of that bickering, he names Tua the starter for this weekend. Why is he so picky about this? And why does he get so upset when people are just asking simple questions?
You know, I've known Nick for a long time. And one of the things that, you know, we normally our conversations, well, most 99% of the time they're revolved around football, but there's some issues. And I've had conversations with he and his wife, Terry, that, you know, he people might say, well, he don't care what people think about him. That's not true. I can tell you that he does care, and it does bother him when he's criticized. And one of the things I've always told him, and Terry, his wife, have told him, look, if you're going to come off as a curmudgeon and sometimes be a jerk, some people will see you as a jerk. You're going to have people that are going to love you regardless, but that's just kind of the way it is. And he completely mishandled this situation. The young reporter, Maria Taylor, did a great job.
Phenomenal great job. Question. And after Nick Saban said, quit asking, she goes, I hear you. And then she followed up with a normal question. I thought she was a rock star that night.
She was phenomenal. She did nothing wrong. She did not only nothing wrong, she did everything as exemplary as you could do for the job that she was doing, which is why Nick Saban realized, hey, I was wrong. And it's not easy for guys to do that. And he called and apologized, and, you know, good for doing that.
Rush the Field with Scott Seidenberg and Chris Leandry can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.